Welcome to the Teaching Space podcast, coming to you from Guernsey in the Channel Islands. Hello and welcome to episode 115 of the Teaching Space podcast. It's Martine here. Thank you very much for joining me. In today's episode, we are focusing on the practice of decision making, because it's something we do every single day and it uses up considerable mental energy. And if you're listening to this podcast, you're probably quite aware that your mental energy reserves are limited. Decision fatigue is very real. There is a ton of research out there to show that when you make decisions, you use up that energy reserve. And therefore, if you make a lot of decisions early on in the day, you are not going to make the right big decisions towards the end of the day. As educators, we make a lot of decisions on a daily basis, some of which are significant and affect a lot of people. So it is definitely worth looking at ways to reduce decision fatigue. What can we do to minimize the number of small decisions we make every single day to reserve energy for those big decisions we have to make? Let's start thinking about all of the small decisions we make on a daily basis now. It's time for a brain dump. If you can grab a pen and paper, it would be a really good idea. You can pause the podcast now and go and do that. Welcome back. Now, what I'd like you to do is think about all of the small decisions you make in a typical day, starting from when you wake up in the morning. You should write these down if it's convenient to do so, or you can do this at another time. Here are a few examples I came up with in no particular order. What to eat for lunch or dinner? When to eat lunch or dinner? You'll notice I haven't included breakfast here as I don't tend to eat breakfast, but that would be a good one too. What time to wake up in the morning? And what time to go to bed at night? What to do at the gym? What to wear to go to the gym? And what to wear to work? There are a ton of other decisions you will have to make that would be classed as small, but hopefully those just give you a few ideas to get started. Now you've got a feel for what these small decisions are, the next stage is to work out whether you can automate, delegate, or eliminate any of those small decisions in order to make room and leave energy for those big decisions you might have to make later in the day. For clarification, when I say automate, I think about this quite broadly. Literally, it means to make automatic. However, I think of it more as systematizing. You can save time and you can reduce decision fatigue if you've got a system in place to carry out a repeated action. And I'm going to expand on that a little bit later. Delegate, of course, means to ask somebody else to carry something out and therefore have to make the decision associated with it. So this might be a partner, a family member, a friend, or a professional service provider. And of course, eliminate means to get rid of the decision-making process surrounding a task completely. That one, of course, is my favourite. It's time for a quick ad break. When you read a non-fiction book or an article online, you probably want to be able to learn from it. At the very least, you want to remember what you read. The trouble is, just reading isn't enough. You need to engage with the material to remember it. So I like to highlight and annotate ebooks and articles. Readwise sends the information to my note-taking app of choice, in my case Notion, but others are supported, allowing me to review my annotations as often as I like. I also receive a daily email from Readwise to remind me what I've highlighted. If you'd like to try Readwise, you can have a free month on me. Go to theteachingspace.com/readwise. actually, that was a pretty well-timed ad break, as we are now going to look at the idea of automation to reduce decision fatigue. And Readwise is a tool that automates a portion of my note-taking and reading process. I'll give you a few examples of things that I do that are now fully automated. One of those is the social media stuff that I do for the podcast. So once a podcast is produced, I put all of the information into an automated system that sends regular tweets and Facebook messages and messages to LinkedIn about podcasts. And it means that podcast messaging is recycled. So it's not, I don't just produce a podcast and I tweet about it once. It's tweeted on a regular basis, and that is fully automated. I do my own tweets and social media messages on other platforms as well, but those specifically related to the podcast are sent out automatically. An example from my home life would be paying bills by direct debit. I pay every single bill by direct debit unless there's a reason why I can't. For example, the provider doesn't allow direct debits. It just means I can completely forget about that process. All I need to focus on is ensuring there is enough money in the bank. An education-related example would be something that I've spoken about on the podcast in the past, and that is automating certain aspects of marking. I have recorded a couple of podcast episodes on how to mark smarter and faster, so I will ensure that these are linked to in the show notes for this episode, which you can find at theteachingspace.com/115. An example of how I automate marking in Google Classroom is by using the built-in comment bank. I only automate comments that I would use over and over again and that don't need to be personalized. For example, if someone's made a spelling, punctuation, or grammar error, I have a standard comment which I can access in a click or two that says, "Spag, please check your spelling, punctuation, or grammar." Even if you don't use Google Classroom, there are ways to automate this type of process. Clearly, I'm not recommending you fully automate your comments like this, but there are some that are suitable for automation. I have colleagues who use marking codes, which of course that's not fully automated, but it is systematized. I also have colleagues who mark using a system called Turnitin, and Turnitin has a quick marks option. Other examples of things I have systematized include my approach to managing the podcast. I use Notion to manage my podcast, and it allows you to have templated checklists. So when I write, record, edit, and share a podcast, it is all done off the back of a very simple but very clear template. And the template takes me through the system of getting the podcast live. So I don't have to stop and make decisions and go, okay, which order do I do things in? And do I have to do this next or this next? It's very much a system. Incidentally, if anyone's listening to this and they are quite interested in starting a podcast, I will share my Notion podcast management template in the show notes, and you're very welcome to have a look at that as it includes my checklists. Another Teaching Space example would be when I collate things for the Teaching Space Extra, which is my email newsletter. I do so in a reasonably automated way. There's certainly a system behind it. I have a Read It Later database in Notion, and if I'm online reading, looking at things that might be useful to share in the Teaching Space Extra, all I need to do is click a button in my browser, and that information is sent to a page in my Notion setup, which is dedicated to the Teaching Space Extra. And that is how I collect inspiration for the newsletter. So you can see there's some system behind that. An example from my personal life would be how my husband and I manage our shopping list. We use an app called Bring, and we share access to the grocery list. So if, for example, my husband uses the last drop of milk, he knows that he needs to go onto the Bring app and add milk to the list. This might be a bit of a stretch when it comes to thinking of systems to reduce the need to make decisions, but actually we generally don't have to do that big thought process of, right, what do we need to buy from the grocery store today? There is definitely some mental work which is reduced by using such a simple, straightforward app and having a process attached to it. Now let's talk about delegation. I delegate quite a few things, and I'm going to explain a couple of those now. I just want to acknowledge that I am in a position of privilege to be able to delegate these things, as they cost money, and I feel lucky that I can do this. I take great joy in delegating gardening and cleaning. I have a gardening firm and a cleaning firm that help me take care of my house and my garden. Like I said, I'm very lucky to be able to afford to do this. These are two activities I loathe, so it's great to be able to get someone else to do them. It also means that obviously I work full time and I'm very busy in the week. It means my weekends are my own. And for my own mental health and well-being, that is essential. I also delegate, to an extent, my meal planning and preparation. I use a meal service called HelloFresh, which you might be familiar with. Basically, HelloFresh give you a selection of meals to choose from every week. So there are still decisions to be made. However, the list of meals is quite limited, so it's easier to make those decisions. You then get all the ingredients in the post and just have to do the cooking. And that's the bit I don't mind. It's the planning and choosing meals that I'm not a fan of. Oh yes, and grocery shopping, not a fan of that either. If these approaches to delegation don't work for you, for whatever reason, there are other options. Something that I thought would be worth exploring was the idea of swapping skills with family or friends. For example, if you're a competent gardener and you love gardening, offer to do your friend's garden for them and ask them if they'll do something for you in return. So you do a skills swap. It really costs nothing to have a chat with family or friends about doing something like this. And you might be surprised when somebody says yes. For example, my husband is an audio editor, but it might surprise you to know that he doesn't do the audio editing for the podcast. And the main reason for this is that when I started the podcast, all those years ago, it was important that I could manage the entire process myself and on my own terms. That's how I prefer to work. Also, from an editing perspective, I know what the episode needs to sound like, so it's actually probably quicker and easier for me to edit it. However, I have been finding that editing interview episodes is taking up a phenomenal amount of my time. Interview episodes are easier to edit. It just kind of makes sense when you listen to a conversation. You can work out how it is supposed to flow. So I had a chat with my husband and I've managed to delegate interview editing to him. It turns out that he was really up for the idea. He's got some new audio editing software he wants to experiment with, and we've made that arrangement. Just ask. You never know what might happen. And the final option is eliminate. Are there any decisions you make on a daily basis that can be eliminated entirely? One approach to this is forming habits. If you form a habit of, for example, going to the gym every single day, you don't actually have to make the decision to go to the gym. You just go every single day because it's a habit. I have a podcast episode on forming habits that stick, and you can find that at theteachingspace.com/49. Another recommendation I have for you is to read James Clear's book, Atomic Habits. Examples of decisions I no longer have to make because I've eliminated them are the time I wake up in the morning. I wake up every single day at 6 a.m, whether it's the weekend or the week. Sometimes at the weekend, I choose to wake up but stay in bed. Nevertheless, I wake up at 6. That's when my alarm goes off. I don't have to decide my wake-up time. On the subject of sleep, I'm not sure if you've had a chance to listen to the episode yet, but I interviewed Daniel White about how to sleep better. The episode is theteachingspace.com/109. I'm quite certain Dan would be happy with the idea of me waking up at the same time every day because it would be better for my circadian rhythm. It's a really recommended episode. Please do have a listen. Another decision I've pretty much eliminated on a daily basis is what I wear for work. I tend to wear something of a uniform. I wear a dress and I have a number of dresses. They're all a similar shape, similar patterns and things like that. And a smart cardigan over the top, usually with a pair of boots. Wearing this self-imposed uniform means I don't have to think about what I'm going to wear in the morning. I just grab a dress and a cardigan that I didn't wear yesterday. Steve Jobs was well known for this. He always would wear a black polo neck and jeans. Mark Zuckerberg followed in his footsteps. And Barack Obama was known for wearing either a navy or a grey suit every single day, because presumably he had a lot bigger decisions to manage than what he was going to wear in the morning. Another example from a member of the Teaching Space community, Bob, was that he uses a robot mower and mulcher. So at 4 o'clock in the morning or something like that, Bob's lawn gets mowed for him. He doesn't even have to think about it. It happens completely automatically. He doesn't have to decide when to do it. That is eliminated. And then that robot mower turns the grass into mulch automatically. What a great example of automation and elimination. Nice work, Bob. Incidentally, Bob shared a photo of his robot mower in the Teaching Space community, so if you're in there, I recommend you check it out. My final thought on this subject is that if you are faced with a massive decision you have to make and you have reached that point of decision fatigue, sometimes it's better to postpone the decision-making process. It's my hope that you won't need to, bearing in mind the suggestions that I've given in this episode, but I think we need to be sufficiently aware of the considerable energy decision-making takes and have a backup plan. Okay, and now it's over to you. I would love to chat more about this subject, and the best place to do this would be in the Teaching Space community. Please pop in for a chat. Go to community.theteachingspace.com. I'd love to see you in there. That's all from me today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. And don't forget to check out Readwise, a recommended service from me. Thanks for listening. Thank you for listening to the Teaching Space podcast. You can find the show notes for this episode at theteachingspace.com.